Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Former Second Lady of the United States Liz Cheney has spent decades studying the nation's fourth president, James Madison. The result of that labor is the new 564-page book, James Madison, A Life Reconsidered. Father of the Constitution, principal author of the Bill of Rights, founder of the first opposition party, Secretary of State, and fourth president of the United States, he was a masterful politician who Cheney believes, despite all of his accomplishments, has been overshadowed by other founders. Liz Cheney is the wife of former Vice President Dick Cheney, is a senior fellow at the American Enterprise Institute, and is the author of 12 books, several on American history. Again, the title of this book is James Madison, A Life Reconsidered, and it is a great pleasure to welcome Liz Cheney to the roundtable.
Well, thank you for having me today.
A delight to have you on the program. Let's just go with the subtitle, A Life Reconsidered. What did you want to reconsider and have us reconsider?
Well, I think the impression that's been left of Madison doesn't put him in the first ranks with Washington and Jefferson. And he was equally indispensable at the founding. Without him, there would have been no Constitution, no Bill of Rights. Even if we had managed to get the first government started, without Madison, it would have started off in a pretty rough way, since he was the politician who understood how to get things done. Plus, his life is just really interesting. It was a story that was fun to tell for its own sake, and also, you know, a significant story, one that was important to tell because of the things he accomplished in his life that are still with us today.
When I'm curious as to when your fascination, your interest in him grew.
Well, I was a member of the Bicentennial Commission to celebrate the 200th anniversary of the Constitution. And it was then, you know, understanding that James Madison was the architect of that amazing document, that I began to be curious about the fact that he was not as well known as some of the others of the founders. I, you know, continued my curiosity, my reading about Madison for many years, and then 5 years ago, got really serious about writing a book and making clear that the country we live in today simply would not exist if it hadn't been for James Madison.
I want to talk about some of those accomplishments in a moment, and to that theory specifically. But why do you think that he has been eclipsed by other founding fathers?
Well, one of the reasons I think is that he was a reserved personality. You know, if he were a politician today, he wouldn't be the kind that elbowed his way to the front of the crowd to get his picture on TV. He understood how effective it can be if you're not so much interested in taking credit, but in getting things done. He was perhaps the best practitioner of that art. He often wrote anonymously. He was happy to have an idea succeed, even if his name wasn't attached to it. So that may be something of a hindrance to his having been recognized. It makes him all the more interesting to study, though, because he is such an example of how reticence can be useful. You know, if you're a politician, it's really tempting to step out and make a comment when an event begins to break. But it's really smart not to. It's really smart to wait until the event is fully unfolded before you comment. That was one of many lessons he can teach us.
So in some ways, he needed a better press agent.
Well, you know, that's curious. That's a good comment. But he understood public relations. He understood, for example, that he led in the formation of the first opposition party, as you mentioned, that parties had a bad reputation then, as of course they do now. And you needed to prepare people. You needed to present them a rationale for establishing a political party before you did it. And so he began by writing essays in a newspaper, the National Gazette, that explained how parties could balance parties. And by explaining that what Alexander Hamilton was doing in the Washington administration made him, in fact, a party that was in favor of expansive government. And so what was needed was a party to make the case for limited government, which is what Madison believed, and I think rightly, the Constitution had created. So, you know, he understood the need to build public opinion before you launched a new enterprise. But you're right, he didn't thump his own chest and try to get his name in the headline.
One of the things that I found fascinating about the book, and I'm hoping that you could address it just a little bit, is to what his relationship was with the other founders, because it was often, as you said, he would fly below the radar, and yet he certainly had a very strong point, but he was also interested in the consensus and working out those disagreements and sort of talking things out.
Yes, he was, but it's also the case that his opposition to Hamilton, who was Washington's appointee, eventually led to a rupture with Washington.
Right.
After the mid-1790s, Madison, who'd been a frequent visitor at Mount Vernon, never went there again. Jefferson, too, became estranged from Washington. Madison and Jefferson were arrayed on one side of the political debate, and Washington and Hamilton on the other. And so, you know, it wasn't just a good, congenial meeting of the minds. In fact, there were big arguments, and it led to estrangement.
But that came later. I mean, they were still able to found the country in the process before that.
Yes, and that was before estrangement. You're exactly right. But the debates at the Constitutional Convention were quite rigorous. Washington didn't participate. He served as the president and didn't get involved in the debates. But there were some very fiery outbursts even at the Constitutional Convention. Jefferson, of course, wasn't there. He was in Paris. But Madison was the one who led in the constitutional effort.
So talk a little bit about his achievements that helped in shaping his legacy.
I'm sorry, that helped in shaping
his legacy.
His legacy. Well, he also, as you pointed out, served as the first president under the Constitution, and it was a very rough time. The northeastern part of the United States, people there, their economy was being ruined by the war, and they became fierce opponents. So fierce that such things happened as a campaign to make any northeastern money available to the government to fight the war. Other campaigns that I think were treading on the edge, or maybe even treading over into sedition. But what Madison did, even as he was prosecuting the war, is he never called for people's right to free speech to be limited. He understood that was part of what would happen in democracy. We would fight a war, and the people who didn't believe in it weren't going just to be quiet and go away. So he really established a precedent that his countrymen were very proud of when the war was over. He had led America to a state where she was now recognized as a force in the world, and he had done it without trampling on rights of free expression.
You write in the book, and it's something that often sticks to him and is often associated with him, is that he was not a well man, and there were bouts of illness that would often taken out of the equation, and you write about that quite a bit, that there certainly were issues, but in some way it even helped him do the work that he did.
He said toward the end of his presidency that he had suffered from sudden attacks somewhat resembling epilepsy and suspending the intellectual functions. This hasn't really been explored before or taken seriously. One of Madison's biographers even suggested he was an hysteric, you know, that this was all made up in his...
Right.
His mind, but I think it's pretty clear, and I, of course, consulted with experts and read a lot of 18th century health manuals, that he did have a mild form of epilepsy, complex partial seizures, which mean, you know, you can hear, but you can't understand. You can talk, but you probably don't make sense. It passes. And you're right, these events did take him out from time to time. He had one when he was training to be a militiaman for the revolution, and that certainly ended his military career when he had one of these seizures during training. But when he wasn't having a seizure, one of the treatments that he believed in for making him better was exercise. So he took long hikes, he took long journeys on horseback. He became quite a fit person. And it's a paradox, really, that, you know, he had this disorder that struck him down from time to time. But when he wasn't experiencing a seizure, he was very vigorous, very energetic, capable of riding much farther than I suspect most 40- and 50-year-olds could do today.
So what should our political leaders of today take from the James Madison story?
Well, I think, first of all, it's important to reestablish constitutional principles, to understand that it's not a matter of whether the president likes a law or not, that his constitutional duty is to see that the laws are enforced. President Obama has not always done this. He's for example, delayed mandates and lifted restrictions in the Affordable Care Act as though, you know, he were the Congress. And he has had his Justice Department, for example, not enforce certain laws, immigration being one. Now, if you don't like the immigration law, the right step is to have a bill introduced in Congress, pass the Congress, president signs it, and then you have a new immigration law. But it's not in keeping with our constitutional form of government to for the executive to willy-nilly say, well, we won't enforce the immigration law. So I think it is time to consider again that we are a government of laws and not men.
And that, I mean, that has been a long criticism for our leaders, including the administration that your husband was a part of, that there has been a circumvention of the Constitution.
You know, I can't hear you. You say it's been a part of many administrations.
Yes, that including the administration that your husband was a part of, that they were
right.
Circumventing the Constitution.
Well, it's a charge that's often made, but I've never seen such a clear instance of it as you know, not enforcing the immigration laws, for example, and changing the Affordable Care Act as time progresses, rather than going back to have the legislature, who's empowered to legislate, do these things.
The name of the book is James Madison, A Life Reconsidered. The book is published by Viking. Lynn Cheney, thank you very much for being with us.
I appreciate being on your show. Thank you.
Thank you very much. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.